Maybe I can hear from you all. Any questions or things you'd like to discuss? Yesterday I had a very nice talk with Graham. So I thought maybe some of you might have some questions. I also had a talk with Danielle yesterday, as well as Michelle and Dave Akinanda. And of course, you get to hear from Edward every day. And also I talked to our fine harmonium accordion player there. And we always hear from Shivananda. I've gotten everybody. So, any questions about anything? You're a regular here?
This temple?
Yeah, horse. Yeah, okay.
No, I'm not regular. It's my second time here. I came here a few years ago.
Oh, a few years ago? You're living in Perth?
Yeah, I am. Born in Perth.
Okay. So what brought you here the first time a few years ago?
I was actually invited here by one of the devotees.
Oh, you met them somewhere?
Yeah.
So what made you decide to fulfill the invitation?
Well, I'm always open to advice about spiritual cultivation.
Mm-hmm.
I guess this was my motivation to come the second time.
So what were your preconceptions the first time?
Of the...
What you would find here?
Honestly, I didn't come with any preconceptions other than... I knew there'd be a temple here. I knew there would be devotional service. I knew there'd be chanting and things like that.
How did you know all that?
I guess from what I picked up, from when I had a meeting with the Christians.
In town, on the streets, and here and there.
Various centers, the restaurants.
Oh, I see. Nice. So, what did you go away thinking after your first time here? It's always good for everyone to hear this. You know?
Good things that I'm here for sure.
Mm-hmm. What stuck out in your memory the most?
I think there was a lecture on that morning. Talking about the diversity of creation.
Mm-hmm.
The gift of being born a human,
mm-hmm.
and how we can use that gift, I guess,
mm-hmm.
for very high things.
Mm-hmm.
And we can also be squandered.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you went away remembering that.
Amongst other things, of course.
Uh-huh. And what was the thing that you had the most difficulty with?
Difficulty.
Or the thing that, shall we say, didn't... What's the thing that rubbed you the wrong way the most, or just, thing that was hardest for you to assimilate?
I couldn't really say there was anything too hard for me to assimilate.
And you're... Okay. So then 2 years went by. Life was chock full of all sorts of things.
Sure.
Busy. And then what made you decide to come again after 2 years?
Well, I'm actually interested in reading some big literature. So I knew there was a library here. I'm coming back every now and again to
have a look. So the attraction for the literature brought you back to...
For sure, and the spirit too.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. All right. So it's nice for everyone to hear this. Any particular questions you have about anything?
Really, I'm reading the publication or was the verse I came across last night.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that.
Mm-hmm.
And
try it. All right.
It really resonated.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, he's looking. Anyone else have a question about anything? Any questions? Yes. Better be a good one.
Is it possible to properly learn, to actually learn Yukta Vairagya, the principle of Yukta Vairagya, without having a spiritual master by anyone?
We accept Krishna's system if you want to be Krishna conscious. So why should we speculate our way around that? We need all the guidance we can get. Haven't you figured that out yet? So an expert devotee who wants to go back to Godhead knows how to get guidance. That is what separates an advanced devotee from a neophyte. Now what does the Srimad Bhagavatam say about the third class devotee, the Kanishtha Adhikari? Third class devotee or neophyte is one who simply gives all his attention to the deity in the temple but does not know how to properly avail himself of other devotees. Now, of course, these days, many times the temple management would love to have lots of Kanishtha Adhikaris because they'll take care of the deity. So sometimes the temple managers say that there is a great shortage of Kanishtha Adhikaris, third-class devotees. But actually, from the Shastra point of view, you're supposed to start as a Kanishtha Adhikari, as a neophyte, and rise to a higher platform. And the only way you rise to a higher platform is to know how to deal with devotees and how to accept advice and guidance. A devotee who wants to go back to Godhead knows how to take advice, good advice wherever it comes from. And you'll notice those who are not making such good progress back to Godhead, they are expert at ignoring advice or never asking for it. So this is one difference you can tell right away. So Krishna knows that it is difficult to perform action for his pleasure in this material world. It's a very difficult art how to distinguish between action for sense gratification and action for Krishna's pleasure. Therefore, you require guidance. There are three types of spiritual master. They may all be in the same person. Two of three may be in, or one. There's the Vartma Padarshika Guru, the one who first shows you about Krishna consciousness. Then there's Diksha Guru, who gives initiation. The Siksha Guru, who gives instruction. Somehow or other, although we are very proud and puffed up, we have to get some kind of advice and guidance. And of course, everyone has Srila Prabhupada's books. Any other? You found your question?
Yes, I have.
All right.
Comes from chapter 2, text 57.
Mm-hmm.
I just like to read it from the side. I find it fascinating.
Oh, good.
In the material world, one who is unaffected by whatever good or evil he may obtain, neither praising it nor despising it, is firmly fixed in perfect knowledge.
So what fascinated you?
We've always been told that to do good things is always good for us.
What's a good thing?
A good thing.
Now we're going to have some fun.
Sharing love.
My favorite answer. Sharing love. Who could fault that? Sharing love. No one here can fault that, right? Sounds great to you, doesn't it, Graham? Sharing love. Definitely. You like that, Monkey Bihari? Sharing love.
Yes. I wouldn't come to work for anybody else on that.
Okay, so sounds like a good answer, doesn't it? Okay. Good is sharing love. Now, naturally, what is our next question? What is love?
What is love?
Yes. Is it a good feeling deep down in your bones?
Nathan, isn't it?
The thing which created us? The thing which created us. What do you mean by that?
It's the force behind us all.
The force behind us all? In the heart. So if I, you can get some
spiritual
kind of
heart.
Spiritual heart.
Yes.
And what's the nature of this spiritual heart?
It's very pure. It contains all divine knowledge, I suppose.
You suppose. Now, if we have pure spiritual hearts, what are we doing in this impure material world?
Somewhere along the line, that pure divine nature of ours got corrupted.
So, what was that first mistake?
I think it came when we covered up, we connected, we looked at our bodies.
But how do we contract these bodies of matter?
By desire, I suppose.
Okay.
Or what we're looking for in life, or...
In other words, in order to fulfill your definition of love, we must understand what the original condition is that we have deviated from. Because you say that we have a spiritual heart which is pure and it has the love. So, then you also say we have the covering, the body of matter, which is interfering or polluting or something?
Corrupting.
Okay. So what is the pure original condition? That's where the real love will be happening, right? Okay. All right, we agree on that. Now, what is the nature of that pure state where the love is really happening, whatever the love is?
The nature of it.
Describe your original circumstances when everything was perfect, the love was flowing perfectly, the love was pure.
I think of it as a perfect state of balance, as a state where everything was known, where...
Well, we want precise knowledge. Formerly we were like this, now we're like that. That's what we want. Just like when you read Bhagavad Gita, it gives you precise knowledge. There's no warm fuzzies or anything vague, right? That's what you like about it, right?
Sure.
Yeah, okay. So, you have to present like that. In our pure state of love, we were like this and we were doing that. And now, okay, so what is the nature of the pure state?
It's God. It's everywhere. It's everything.
Can you be a bit more specific?
It's a state of I guess, perceiving reality for exactly what it is, without any tainting of it, without any corruption of it, without any ego within it.
Are you satisfied with these kind of definitions?
No, I'm working on it.
Ah.
That's part of life, I guess.
Okay.
Jesus.
Hmm?
That part of my life is to become Jesus.
Okay.
Come to know this.
Now, how are you going to come to know this? Do you think it's going to be by your own intellectual and sensory capacity?
I can use those things.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure there's any way we can get there.
Suppose I want to know you. What is the best way?
Share time together.
Yes. And I ask you. Yes? Similarly, if you want to know the Supreme, if you want to know Godhead, best you hear from the Supreme. And that's the advantage you have in Bhagavad Gita. You are hearing directly from the source of all energies. Krishna is explaining how he is. And he's telling you, if you want, you can come back to me. Otherwise, we'll spend lifetime after lifetime speculating. Krishna also says that in Bhagavad Gita. Bhunam jamanamante, gyanavam mam prabhajate. After many births and deaths, giving vague definitions, you'll finally understand everything is my energy, and then you'll become my devotee. So what's holding us back, actually, is our speculations. We don't precisely know anything, and that has to be because our mind, intelligence, and senses are limited. So what materialistic society has done to us is convinced us to be satisfied with vagueness. So you can go to a cafe or call up your friends and you can say things like, you know, love, let's share the love, and the undefinable, or the everywhere, and they'll all nod their heads, yeah. So society has conditioned us to accept that kind of talk. But when you read Bhagavad Gita, you notice there's nothing of that. So immediately you begin to wonder, what's going on here? Nowhere in society do I find precise knowledge. Everyone is talking vague. Gradually you begin to realize that people are covered by ignorance. And you develop an aspiration to get out of that ignorance. And how do you get out of the ignorance? By hearing from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that you've taken an interest in hearing from Krishna. That is a special thing. We don't know how many births you've taken in the material world, in what body, on what planet, before this desire developed. The desire to hear from Krishna is the expression of the pure self. And gradually, by hearing, you learn how to engage every aspect of your pure self for Krishna's pleasure. And then, you have revived your original perfect condition. You see, you have a spiritual body. The material body is simply a covering. You have a spiritual form, and you're meant to exist in perfect spiritual relationship with Krishna in the spiritual world. Now, you are in a position to get specific, definite knowledge of the spiritual world. And no more will you have to say vague definitions and answers. You take your information from the source of everything, and you've got the best knowledge. If I want to know you, ideally speaking, I should ask you, and I'll find out. If I want to know what you did yesterday, who can tell me better than you? What did he do yesterday? You must know. That's enough. But if I ask you, you know. So if you want to understand the Supreme Pure, you take your knowledge directly from the Supreme Pure. That is the advantage of Krishna consciousness. Now, without understanding the Supreme Godhead, we cannot define love. Can you understand that? Just like some little kids. They have lots of little kids here sometimes. So, they're running around. Do you do that? You run around?
No, all the time?
No, this little kid. You're a bit too old for that. So, suppose all the little kids run around and together say, we're going to make the laws for how this temple is run. The little kids all say, we are the temple management committee. What do you call your committee here? It's got a new name, I hear rumors. Huh? I thought that's the old name. The temple council, I see. A rose by any other name smells the same. Anyway, it's nice to have new names, you know. Suppose all the little kids said, we are now the temple council, and we're going to decide how you manage this place. What would the adults say? They would just laugh. Because the kids have no power to, you know, lay down the law. Similarly, we as tiny parts of Krishna, we have no power to decide what is good, what is bad, what is love. That is laid down by the supreme authority. And what is the supreme authority? That person from whom everything emanates, from whom all the energy emanates. So before we start talking about sharing love, we have to understand what love is. And the way you understand what love is not scratching your head or searching your heart or listening to the voice within. You listen to the source of everything. And in Bhagavad Gita, the source of everything speaks. How does that sound? Possible? Okay. So you were saying that this verse attracts you because... You can read it again so we all remember, please.
In the material world, one who is unaffected by whatever good or evil he may obtain, neither praising it nor despising it, is firmly fixed in perfect knowledge. Perfect knowledge is attractive in the effort. Being in a state that's basically a...
Yes. So, when you understand that good and bad in the material world are actually the same, then you can have perfect knowledge. Whether it's so-called good or so-called bad in this world, you're not meant to be here. Why would you analyze a disease condition and say, well, this fever was good, but that fever is bad? You want to get rid of the fever. So Bhagavad Gita teaches you, don't dwell upon squeezing out differences between this material circumstance and that material circumstance. Rise above it all. Here's another good example that Srila Prabhupada would give. Gold handcuffs, silver handcuffs, tin handcuffs. Suppose you and your friends are walking down the street and the police, the tactical police, they want to arrest you for something, and they slap on you gold handcuffs, they slap on your other friend tin handcuffs, and the other one silver handcuffs. Now what would you say? Just look, mates, I got gold handcuffs on me. I'm better. You've only got tin handcuffs. Obviously this is ridiculous, right? Whether you have gold, tin, or silver handcuffs, the whole point is you're bound. So what Krishna is explaining to you in that verse is, so-called good binds in this world as well as so-called bad. What you're really looking for is the transcendental platform beyond good and bad karma. Good karma gives you in your next life some beauty, some wealth, some educational distinction, birth in a aristocratic family. Bad karma gives you the opposite. But whether you have good or bad karma, you're bound. And the whole point is you don't want to be bound. So in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna invites you to rise above this illusion where there seems to be good and bad in the material world. Get above the whole thing. Get above the whole network of samsara, repeated birth and death. That's an exciting career. So this is the kind of culture that we're trying to encourage here. The culture of rising above material nature. Don't you think that's a noble calling? But what gets in the way of that? Just like you came 2 years ago and you didn't come back for 2 years. Now, there's a lot of time. Now, what might have happened in that gap?
What might have happened?
Yeah. But I mean, every day were you doing something to make progress to the ultimate goal of life?
Yes.
Can we ask what? Was that helping you make progress to the ultimate goal of life, though?
Not the ultimate goal.
No. Oh, but we're talking about the ultimate goal—freedom from material existence. Do they teach that at the university?
My knowledge.
There's one university that motto is freedom through knowledge.
Have I said freedom?
So, in other words, the ultimate goal means I'm directly making progress how to get out of material existence and how to revive my perfect spiritual nature. So I don't think they teach that at the universities. critical thinking. Really? They taught you that at the university, critical thinking? Can you give me an example?
Don't believe everything what it
says. Huh?
Don't believe everything what it says.
Well, I mean, anybody knows that. You don't have to go to university, you know, just to learn, don't believe everything that's said.
Sometimes knowing you're doing brainwashing, you don't notice.
So the university helps you cut through the brainwashing, huh? Can you give me an example?
Oh, I grew up in Russia, and in Russia it's like, you know, you don't live with open mind, you don't get different sort of, you believe what it says and what is in the newspapers and what is in the propaganda, you know, and, I mean...
And in Australia it's different.
No, it's not in Australia, it's the same.
So you went to the university here in Australia and you found that they teach you how to question everything.
Well, I feel like I'm thinking differently now after 2 years of university. Mm.
So did they teach you, what is your name please?
Ivan.
Ivan, we're going to teach you critical thinking. Are you this body or are you not? Did they teach you that?
Well, they teach that you get a source of information and...
No. Did when you walked in the classroom, did they teach you, Ivan, before we can figure out anything, we've got to understand who we are. Then we can figure out what to do.
No.
Oh, doesn't sound too critical to me.
I mean, that's the problem with the university.
I agree, yes.
They don't teach you to understand yourself.
They don't teach anything for real. The first step in knowledge, that's done in Bhagavad Gita. Are you this body or are you not? The next thing you have to understand is, since I am spirit soul covered with matter, what is the origin of the material and spiritual energy? What is the nature of the origin of everything? Is it matter? Is it spirit? These are essential questions. But the university does not help us to answer those questions. Basically, they just give you a relativistic insight that everyone has their own view, everyone has their own perspective. If you want to think you're spirit soul, that's all right. And if you want to think you're a matter, that's all right. It's all up to you. That's the best they can teach you. Did they teach you in the university that there is a supreme authority? No. So basically they are conditioning people to think that it's up to me what life is. And while you're thinking it's up to me, the laws of nature are slapping you into one body or another. While you're thinking it's all up to me, we all have our own perspectives. Yes. So therefore I say universities don't teach you critical thinking. You understand now?
I mean, they condition you.
They condition you, I agree.
You're correct. But, I mean, at the same time, if you have your own strong power inside, and together with this condition, you can find balance. You know, not to decondition, but at the same time.
Well, you're trying to be a good student, but I went to university and. Sometimes you study, but mainly, you know, you're looking for a good time. It's time for boy meet girl, girl meet boy.
Well, maybe after school, I go to school here, but...
I see.
I'm a mature age student, so...
You're what?
I'm a mature age student.
Never too mature for that kind of stuff. You know that. So once again, the university does not teach us critical thinking. It conditions us. they make you think you are the body. You won't take any science course at university that causes you to doubt you are the body. The whole point of science as taught in university is to get you to accept everything is matter. We had, last night I was talking to one young man. He branded himself as an anarchist. So he was telling me that we are just matter. So he's got this anarchist philosophy. You've met any of these anarchists? They exist here in Perth, huh? So what is their philosophy? What's the point? Can you explain? Or?
I really don't know much about them, but I think they speak about cutting down hierarchy.
No system, no management.
Yeah, I think that's how you think of that as freedom.
This was main point of a
path. Right. So, I said, well, before you worry about whether there should be a system or not, what is the nature of the people in the system? What's the identity of the people? I said, what do you mean? I said, are you matter or are you something else? So he told me quite confidently, we are matter. So I said, great. Then what do we need to worry about anarchy or this ism or that ism? We're just matter. This is matter, this podium, the microphones matter, we are matter, so why should we worry? If we're just matter, why should anything matter? Right? I can pour some chemicals down the drain of the sink, and I can pour you down. No, you're just matter. Hey, you're just matter. It doesn't matter. Just ask them. Does it last the wooden podium here? Does it matter to you if we burn you? And it should be the same for you. You're just matter. Somehow you can talk. So I asked this anarchist, why you worry about your political philosophy? Because we're all just matter and nothing matters. He got real flustered. But. I said, no, you don't have to worry. Don't be in anxiety. There's no need to. Push your philosophy. We're all just matter. Nothing matters. I'll think about this, and I think we ought to talk again. This is how crazy materialistic philosophy is, and this is what they teach you at the university. And all the students become very invigorated in this kind of understanding, and they think, yes, everything is material, and we should just try to enjoy our senses, and that's the greatest goal in life. When we graduate from the university, we want a good job. That's the whole point of it, right? You're hoping that by going to university, you'll get more money. And with the more money, you'll get more sense gratification. And then maybe in the process of getting your university degree, you're thinking, maybe my intellect will have its curiosity satisfied. But the main thing is to get that piece of paper so you can get money. And then maybe you'll meet a nice wife while you're there or something. Find some good parties. So how does this help you become a critical thinker? What do you think? Or anything like that. Maybe I'm being too severe. How does this kind of activity of taking up that kind of education, how does it help you develop critical thinking? My point is it just conditions you.
You have to be critical about what you're reading, for sure.
Do they teach you that at university?
Depends on what you study, but generally no.
Generally no. And if they do teach you how to be critical, it's concerning unimportant things. They don't teach you how to be critical about the most important thing. What are you? What is the source of everything? And actually, you can't even think about those questions without knowing how to control your senses. Your mind is too, you know, woozy. Your mind is too unclear because of bad living habits. So they can't actually teach critical thinking to the students because the students all have uncontrolled senses. Did you ever think about it that way? Yeah. Their brains are just practically non-existent. They can't control their senses. They can't control their mind. And so how can they actually think clearly and critically about what is the ultimate goal of my life? They're trained in the university to be very intelligent about such unimportant things. But the main issues, they can't even think about. And how can they think straight? All the students go to the university scantily clad, and they're just concerned with where the parties are, and, oh, who's this over here, and like that. That's the main thing on their mind. Where's the good intoxication? Or the serious ones are hoping, we'll be good students. We'll sacrifice going to the parties because we want a good job. And then there's some rare ones who are really just into studying. They want to know. But they learn everything except what they should know. They can speak 5 languages. They can tell you about astronomy, geology, engineering, business administration. Ask them, who are you? Well, that's not a practical question. That's the result of university education. Who are you? Please, we have to put food on the table. We have to pay the rent. Society has to be organized. This is not a practical question. They come here and say that all the time. You Hare Krishnas, you live in a dream world. You're wondering about who you are? You're wondering about the ultimate source. Get serious. Just be yourself. Express yourself. Don't worry about who's in control. Do you see any supreme controller? No. So, make merry. Enjoy. According to the way you feel is best at the present moment. That's the way it is, right? Oh, you don't think so?
You think you look at a lot of people here?
Yes. Yeah, there's always an exception. The exceptions prove the rule. How many persons have you found that can give you precise knowledge of existence? Yes. Right, so therefore, I'm exonerated. Therefore, yes. That's why I'm speaking like that. As you yourself said, very few people are the exception. So what we're trying to do here, you may wonder, what are all these people like? You have persons who live here in the ashram. You have persons who live in their own homes. They're working during the day. What are they up to? What's their focus? Their focus is that they want to make a real solution to the problems of life. They want to free themselves from the shackles of matter and revive their love of Krishna. There can't be any real love unless we have relationship with the Supreme. We don't have the capacity to love separately from Krishna. We're not independent. We are part of something bigger. We are part of Krishna. So Bhagavad Gita will teach you about Krishna. Then all these things will start to become clear. You have any questions, Graham? How does all that sound to you? Graham always says it. I just want to know Krishna more. Any questions from over here? Danielle, what do you think? You knew it was coming. Any questions? So I have a question. Now, how is it that we can live day after day, even though we're completely ignorant. How is that possible? How can we act without knowing the full system that we're living in? No, no, I'm asking. Yes. Yes. Yeah. And just to ease the pain, what do you do? You know, intoxication, right? Yeah. Yeah, not all the time. I would never suggest that. A little bit here and there won't do any harm. Right, Graham? Yeah, just a little bit. And, of course, if you happen to meet the right person, you know, and you have a little casual interaction, it'll also do you no harm, right? As long as both partners are willing, right? Sure, right? Yes, yes. But even then, you know. Oh, generally. Yes. When you say so, too?
Other people in this start to suffer, they...
Uh-huh.
You mean when people are suffering, they put them through?
No, they don't know anything, yet, in order to make it through without addressing that ignorance, they find these temporary stimulations, intoxication, casual sexual encounters, just to get through the day, you know? Yes. Now, if we take those things away, people think you're asking them to commit suicide. When they hear our regulative principles, they faint. What do you guys do? Know this, know that, especially know that. Why? But how can you get out of the difficult situations in life if you don't know how to control your senses? Now, you are a father with three kids. How old are your kids? All right. So, you have to think, what are you really going to give to your children to make a difference? Yes, you must think about that. The persons here, they're always thinking like that. In fact, ideally, they think about that before they have a child. What are we going to give this child to make a difference? Now, if you raise your child just to be an uncontrolled sense gratifier, what's the point? The world is full of those kind of kids. Therefore, if you as a parent want to make a difference, you are responsible for knowing the art, science, and culture of how to train your child in perfection. That's a real dad. So what do you say about that? No, ideally, you must. You must. Otherwise, you're cheating. Otherwise, you know, you had some kids out of lust, and they're born, and, you know, what can you offer them? Well, just be good, get a good education, get a good job. You're so fortunate here, you're growing up in Australia, not Russia like me, so please, you know, study hard, be a good citizen, right? You're free now in Australia. I did not grow up free. Is that all you can offer them? These kind of platitudes? Okay, like what? And how do they do that? How do they try to understand what life is about? Okay, then what do they think about if they just don't only think about material things? What should they think about? And where do they learn that? No. They need help to understand the difference between matter and spirit. And you're supposed to give that help. So the Vedic command in the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the graduate study to Bhagavad Gita, The Vedic injunction or command is, don't be a mother, don't be a father, don't be a husband or a teacher, unless you can save your dependent from the cycle of repeated birth and death. So what do you say about that? Yes. So it's not too late for you. Now you owe it to your children, as well as your wife, to find the best way to live and the best knowledge. Otherwise, it's cheating, it's irresponsibility, and you get bad karma for having dependents that you're unable to give proper instruction to. The laws of nature hold you accountable. You fathered, you married, and you could not give proper knowledge. Therefore, you get reaction for this. So you have taken up very immense responsibilities. So you should think, what am I going to do about my three kids and my wife? What kind of knowledge can I give them? Will they be just satisfied with me bringing home a paycheck? A lot of men, they, in the traditional sense, they used to feel good about that. I'm the breadwinner of the family. I'm bringing home the paycheck. I'm putting shoes on your feet. I'm dad, the maintainer. But our point is that that kind of maintenance, it should be there, but even the animals are doing it. The funny thing is nowadays the dads don't even want to do that. So, that you're materially maintaining your children, that's nice, but these things are also done by the animals. Yes? These things are also done by the animals. Yes? So if you really care and love for your children, you love your children and your wife, you've got to give them the best thing, perfect knowledge and a perfect lifestyle. Then you have real love. Otherwise, what can you do? Just give them a hug, oh, I love you, and here's some money, and do good in school, and right? What more can you do? Give what? How do you do that? You cut out your heart and give it to them? Now tell me, how do you give your heart? What's a good atmosphere? TV playing, music playing, barbecue in the backyard. They know how to do barbecues yet? They were born here or in Russia? Oh, so they learn how to, they learn about barbecues yet? Oh. So, real love, to give your heart, actually means to give them transcendental knowledge. They should know who they are, why they're in this world. Then you're a real dad. So it's not too late. So what do you think about that?
To be honest, I wasn't exactly paying attention
to everything. Okay. Mm-hmm. So in your case, what do you feel is most important for you?
Inside.
Mm-hmm.
Merge with God,
you said? Bhagavad Gita actually doesn't like that word too much. You'll find as you get deeper into the text, merging with God. Because generally, I'm not sure what you mean by that, but generally when this word merge with God is used, it means you give up your individuality. Now, right in that second chapter, you already passed it. Krishna says, never was there a time when you had no individuality, and never will there be a time. Your individuality is a precious gift, and actually you can never lose it. It allows you to serve the supreme individual. So, devotees of Krishna never want to merge. They don't want to lose their individuality. They do want to merge in love. In pure love, the interests of the lover and the beloved are the same. So in that sense, they've merged. Okay. Right. But merging never means to give up your identity. That's considered spiritual suicide. All right, to find out about perfect love of God, perfect union with God, you have to find out about God. Now, it's your mission to find out where you can get the most comprehensive, expansive knowledge of God. Then your life's successful. So you've made that good move. You said, well, they have a library of all those books here. I'll read them. And you'll find out all the details of the science of God. To have some knowledge that there is God, that's something. We don't criticize that. But the best thing is to have expansive knowledge of God. Just like, suppose I'm going to tell people that I know you. And I just say, see that man? I know him. And they ask, well, what about him? I said, you know, that man. That wouldn't really impress you that I knew you, would it? But if I could say your name, your activities, your qualities, then that would show I knew you. So simply to say God, 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 this is just the bare beginning. We need to know the specifics. Just like even your tiny existence has specifics. Similarly, the Supreme Personality of Godhead has specifics. You can accept that? Okay. So it's your responsibility to get the most expansive knowledge of the specifics about the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that's what Krishna consciousness is all about. Any questions from our devotees here? Yes.
If we do meet somebody and we try to explain Krishna consciousness as the personality of Godhead, and we find that the listener finds it very, very hard to even comprehend, is it because of their past karma that they can't comprehend, or?
People are in this world because they don't want Krishna. Someone who knows they're sick, they want the medicine. But it's very difficult teaching Krishna consciousness because people think that they're healthy. They don't need the cure. So, because people are in this world to forget Krishna, when you try to remind them about Krishna, they don't want to hear it. It goes deeper than even karma. Although there's no doubt sinful activities in the past life make it difficult to understand Krishna, but it goes even deeper than that. Krishna does say in Bhagavad Gita, Yesham to antagatam papam jananam punyakarmanam. Only those who have made a complete stop to sinful activity, antagatam papa, they can understand me. Sinful activity is rebellion against Krishna. So, it goes deeper than just sinful activity. Underneath it all is the rebelliousness against Krishna. I don't want to hear about Krishna. I'm making the laws for myself. So, as a doctor, you're trying to give the medicine. So, Srila Prabhupada explained that he was asked if you're trying to introduce Krishna consciousness to someone, especially Krishna conscious literature, and they say no. Whose fault is it? So Srila Prabhupada explained, it's always that person's fault. You're a doctor trying to give the medicine. You're never wrong for trying to give the medicine. Now it's true, you can become a better and better doctor, but still you're never wrong for giving the medicine. You are giving the medicine. That is a fact. So it's not wrong that the person said no. It's just that simply you can become a better and better doctor in the future. Prabhupada used to praise a 5-year-old girl who would walk up to people and say, do you know who Krishna is? And the person would say, no. And she would say, he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Srila Prabhupada said, this is first class preaching. This is big preaching. Now, naturally, we don't send our book distributors out on the streets of Perth walking up to people, do you know who Krishna is? Because they are more tactful in administering the medicine. But still, if this little boy here just went out on the streets in Perth and said, do you know who Krishna is? He's still giving the medicine. He's not wrong. Any other questions? So we hope you come back again and again. Don't wait 2 years, please. And you also? You're coming regularly? First time. Well, unfortunately, you ran into me. I'm sorry. I'm not always here. Don't worry. And Graham, you're coming every night? Oh, but a lot. Yeah, you live nearby, right? Don't you? He's coming quite often. This is very good. You're feeling this is a happy community here? Good. We want that of all the devotees. You should make, when someone comes here, they should feel what you're about. They should sense something special is here. You should treat them so wonderfully. They should always get prasad. You should always inquire about their welfare. You had a question? Yeah. What's that? More stories about what?
Not realizations.
I think Maharaj means that the story you told about the Polish thing or Hungarian thing and all the Brahmin and this and that.
You want communist country stories, is that it? Those are always the best sellers. Is that what you want? When I used to take the boat, sometimes I would take the ferry from Scandinavia, from Copenhagen, Denmark, to Poland. I would leave at night, and I was just in my late 20s. And the boat took about 12 hours, and the first 8 hours, I would just cry. Just alone in the cabin in the boat. I would just cry. Krishna, why do I have to do this? I don't even know if I'm coming back. I don't know what's waiting me when I get off this boat. Why do I have to do this? Then I would go to sleep and finally I wake up and chant and into battle. But it was very heavy because we didn't know if we were coming back or not. I was wanted. I had a $50,000 price on my head. Yeah. And I was using false passports. I had a British passport, a Colombian passport, because I was wanted, so I had all kinds of wigs. So, it's very heavy. Really made me cry out for Krishna's mercy. So for the first 8 hours, I would just cry. Oh, why do I have to do this? Who cares? Who knows? You're just alone. You couldn't tell anybody you were going. Like when you're going to another temple, you can tell everyone. But we couldn't tell anybody because devotees didn't understand the need for secrecy. So you just had to sneak off and not tell anybody. I was in charge of some parts of Scandinavia, so all of a sudden I would just disappear. Some devotees would know, but generally no one knew. I would just disappear. Just drive my car to the ferry, park it, get on the boat. It's up to Krishna whether I come back or not. So it taught me how to cry out for Krishna's mercy. I would complain sometimes. Prabhupada said you just become Krishna conscious. All you have to do is chant, dance, feast. That's all. What am I doing this for? Of course, my chanting was very good because I remember one time I landed. I was taking the plane this time from I don't know where, probably Stockholm to Warszawa to Warsaw. So, and this is all going on during the martial law days in Poland. You know, the Russians had threatened Poland. You know, you get it together or we're invading. So they forced the Poles, the Polish communists, to establish martial law. You know, they sealed off the whole country. You couldn't make phone calls out of the country. You couldn't move out of your city without an identification. There were tanks ringing the cities, riot police in the streets. So the Russian communists, they made the Polish communists do that. They said, otherwise we're invading you. So I remember once I was, I was driving from West Berlin to Prague in Czechoslovakia, and you had to go through East Germany to do that. So I'm driving in East Germany, heading for Czechoslovakia, and I turn on the radio. You can get West Berlin radio, and you know they're giving you reports. Right now, the Russians are prepared to invade Poland. There's 5 military divisions here in East Germany. They're 10 military divisions waiting on the Czech-Polish border. There's another 5 on the Russian-Polish border. And I'm driving through all these areas, and I'm hearing this on the radio. You know, there you are all alone, you know, and you're hearing these reports. 5 military divisions right in the town you're passing through, and they're all ready to pour into Poland. Twice they did that. They brought the armies right up to the Polish border and then backed off. But twice they did it. And so finally they forced the Polish communists to themselves, you know, lock up the whole country. So, anyway, it was a very heavy time for the devotees. So, I was flying from Stockholm to Warsaw and wanted, fugitive. So I had all these different disguises, you know, fancy suits, you know, French silk shirts, because in the beginning we used to sneak into the countries, I guess you'd be like brahmachari style, just wearing real, shabby clothes, you know, austere for Krishna, you know, driving old junky cars, you know, austerity. And of course the police picked this out immediately because they didn't want those kind of Westerners coming. They wanted Westerners to come who would spend money. So you come with an old car across the border wearing old clothes and they just, hey, come up, you know, they just search you completely. So finally we changed to driving new cars, you know, a Saab, wearing, you know, flash clothes, and then their attitude was completely different. Oh, you're coming to our communist paradise to spend your Western money. Come on in. No problem. Yeah. They always wanted to make sure you were staying at a high-priced hotel. You know, bring that Western hard currency in. And if they found that you were sleeping in your car, then they would get very heavy. You had to spend the money. So, I remember, this is another story. I remember once just being in a hotel room in Prague, Czechoslovakia, and I just crying. I just want to be a simple devotee. Oh, Krishna, why do I have to do this? I was always lamenting. So anyway, this time I was flying from Stockholm. It's very difficult to get me to talk about this. It's like, you know, Vietnam War veteran talking about Vietnam. So I usually don't do this. I don't know why I'm doing it. So the plane was going from Stockholm to Warsaw. So I had my wig on. I think this time I had like a big Jimi Hendrix type wig. And I had like, you know, spectacles, I guess like John Lennon type eyeglasses, you know. I got off the plane and I got to the passport control and the guy, he kind of looked at me and all of a sudden he looked over his shoulder like someone was motioning to him. Then he got real nervous and he looked back at me and said, you know, you go over there. He directed me to some special booth. I said, uh-oh, they've got me. They've got me cold now. So I went to the booth, and there was this lady, you know, security police. She was there. And so, you know, she sat me in the room, and so then, you know, she went to talk to somebody, and I'm just sweating. Oh, they really have me. Oh, what am I going to do? This is it. They've caught me. You know. So then she came back, and she kept looking over her shoulder, and I was sitting there just, you know, to myself, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Krishna. What to do now? And then I watched her, and she was gesturing to someone way across the airport entry place. You know, it was like, you know, like at the Perth airport, there's like 20 passport controls all on the road. So she's looking at someone way down, and she's gesturing, like, him? No, no, it can't be him. No, 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 not him. No, 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 not him. She was gesturing to somebody. I realized later that he can't be the one we want. He looks too innocent. It can't really be him. She's, no, 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 no. So after about 10 minutes of her gesturing like that, it can't be him. This is not him. And then finally, she comes, she turns to me and says, we are so sorry. Please enter into the People's Republic of Poland. I can see that Krishna was in control. Let's see. There was another instance of Krishna Shachar and I. This is our first trip there. We didn't know really how to sneak around. So we were at a university. And this is really a bad thing in a communist country to be, you know, preaching Krishna consciousness at a university. Yeah, we had such a nice program we had. Like 50 students, even professors were there. We got really excited. Wow, this is ecstasy. And I remember after I gave the talk, we had some Isha Upanishads, Krishna conscious books in the Polish language. And of course, in those days, you know, such items were really hot, you know, to get books printed in the West about secret Eastern knowledge, you know. So after I gave the lecture, I just said, and oh, by the way, we have a few of these books that I was basing my talk on. I just held it up. Anyway, if anyone happens to be interested, you can come up afterwards. So as soon as I ended my talk, boom, 50 people come charging up, you know, where are those books? Where are those books? So we were just in ecstasy. After that, some students invited us to speak on their student radio show. So, you know, I got on the radio and said, oh, this education is just oppression. You know, you should really, you know, become spiritually advanced. And we just completely forgot we were in a communist country. All right. So, in our usual way, we took rest in the car. Real austere. Brahmacharis. So, so we woke up the next morning and there's someone tapping on the window. You know, security officer. So he motions, you come with me. And he takes us to the university head's office. And of course, all the university heads, they're always Communist Party members, otherwise you don't get that post. So, you know, there's about three of them, of these university heads in the room. And we walked in there and they're just, so, what have you been doing here? Well, what are we doing here? We're just like meeting people, we're just tourists. We heard about your talk last night, and we heard about you on the radio. Oh, but we were, you know, we were just trying to meet nice people, and we don't think so. We think you are cultural subversive agents of the USA, and we are now going to turn you over to the secret police. So then the secret police sent a motor caravan to escort us to the secret police headquarters. This is in Torun, in Poland. They had our car in the middle, and then there was motorcycles in front and back, and police cars in front and back. This big convoy, they were escorting us voluntarily to the police headquarters. So then they brought us into the secret police inner chambers, and they had this big oak table in the middle of a room about this size. And they had like about 14, you know, Polish equivalent of KGB, they called the SB there. They had about 14 of them sitting around the table. They made us sit at the table. What are you doing in this country? We know what you're doing. You are here to cause cultural disruption on behalf of the CIA. We've got you. America can't save you now. You can call your lawyer. It doesn't matter. You're under our control. So tell us what you're doing in this country. And then they got the books. They said, you smuggled these books in. I said, no, we didn't smuggle them in. We did, but we the guards at the border saw them, and they said, oh, very nice. And you smuggled these books. No, we never do such a thing. So they were just really heavy. You're never going back home. We're going to lock you away. You're causing political subversive activities. So I was really getting heavy. So then finally I got an idea. So I stood up. I made a big speech. You see this passport? It says I'm an American citizen. But I want you to know, in my country, you know, because of my color, I'm just a third-class citizen. I'm not a real American. I can't get a job that I want. I can't go to a hotel and stay where I want. Everything is discrimination. Their eyes just, wow! We make this kind of propaganda, but you mean it's actually true? They were like, wow, our own propaganda is true. I said, yes, it's so horrible. Living in the worst parts of the cities, no opportunity for advancement because of discrimination, because of racial prejudice. They were just, eyes were just like, they were like, wow, we thought when we said these things in our newscasts, we were just making propaganda. Now we're finding out it's true. They were just like, they were in ecstasy. So I said, I came here to Poland, to the communist country, to find brotherhood and freedom. Yes, yes, go on, speak it. I came for opportunity. Yes, tell us more. I came to experience what it's like to be in a real equal society. Oh, go on speaking. So finally, I kept on going on. Look, we apologize. We were wrong. Please, these books, they're great. Whatever you're doing is great. Please. Welcome to our country. As soon as we got out of there, we just, you know, jumped in the car and headed for the border. So, anyway, these are some of the... You have to, you know, use your intelligence. They couldn't believe. They thought this is too good to be true. Because the communists, they didn't really believe their own philosophy, but they just had to pretend they believed it. So here was somebody saying repeating all their propaganda. So they were in ecstasy. They couldn't believe. I mean, it's actually true, all this stuff we've been saying. Because they would always tell people in the communist countries that in America, it's horrible, there's discrimination, there's bias, this, that, there's no equality, but in the workers' paradise, everything is so nice. So I just confirmed this, and they were just so happy.
Yeah, it was one case in Russia, one guy came from the United States, and it seemed like he was voted as a hero.
So, anyway, we used our intelligence for Krishna, how to keep going, but it was a very heavy situation. That's why when I hear new bhaktas tell me about their tough times, I just... But we wanted the mercy. Prabhupada had said, if anyone wants the special dust of my lotus feet, he'll go preach in communist countries or Muslim countries. So we were fired up. Yes, we want the special dust. We want the special mercy. We weren't thinking, oh, how to have a comfortable time. You know? We wanted to get that special mercy of Krishna. So we took these risks. Anyway, there's so many stories I could tell you now. You got me into it, but it's getting late. I know you don't want to hear it. So, all right. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. How do you want? Here we have some prasad for anyone who wants some prasad.